You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Cool Project Show. Here we showcase projects from around the world, and I'm your host, Michelle Molyneux, and today we will literally have an out-of-the-world show. With us, we have Patricia Tribe, who is passionate about education and space exploration and is also the founder of Storytime from Space. Patricia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So before we begin and talk about your amazing vision for Storytime in Space, tell us about yourself and how you got to work at NASA and your amazing vision for Storytime in Space.
Well, I'm an educator at heart, and so very passionate about that, and I like taking on challenges. I've sort of done that all my life. I have my pilot's license. I've done a couple Ironman triathlons, those kinds of things, and I had this idea for Storytime from Space, and it was one of those ideas that felt really spectacular to me, and so this vision was one that I checked with a bunch of other folks and educators and said, hey, am I the only one that thinks this is a really great idea? And they said, no. So everybody was on board, and I started with another challenge called Storytime from Space.
So this is while you were working at NASA as an educator, or was it after?
No, it was after. I worked down at Space Center Houston, down in Houston for 13 years as the director of education. And so I had a lot of experience with educational programming around the space program. This project, actually, I had left my position at Space Center Houston and moved up to Canada. I was back down in the States visiting some friends and making some pasta dinner. And I had been researching prior to that day, prior to making dinner, about how much literacy is being encouraged in classrooms and how there's a trend to encourage more and more folks, more and more educators to teach more language arts and literacy skills, which is phenomenal, right? But the research was also showing that the amount of time that they were increasing in the language arts, they were mostly decreasing in the sciences. You know, there's only so much time in a school day, so if you're going to increase something, where does the time come from? And it was being taken from the sciences. And I thought, that's not good. And then while cooking dinner, I had the idea for Storytime from Space about, you know, literacy and science should not be two separate things. You need to be literate in the sciences. You need to use literacy and language arts in science. And you need both of these sets of skills to be successful. So out came this Storytime from Space idea.
Mm-hmm. And which age group does this actually cover?
This is, it covers a wide range. The younger ones, which are probably, I know of some people who are reading the books with the kids at age 3 and showing the kids the astronauts reading the books. But most of the content will be for elementary, middle school age. And then there will be some content for high school, and on the side, we have some universities that are interested in some of the science that we're doing as well. But the majority of the story time from space will be elementary and middle school.
Oh, great. So I guess stepping back, I know when it comes to having that vision, sometimes it's really hard to execute and sell that idea and that vision. So go through the steps with me in how did you get this to become a reality from the vision?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the Storytime from Space program, I'll tell you a little bit about it itself so it'll make a bit more sense. The program we have sent books up to the International Space Station, and those books are children's books. And they are being read by the astronauts on orbit to the children back on Earth. And the astronauts are videotaping themselves doing that and sending me back the videotapes of those readings. So that's the one component of it. Then the other side of it is we have just recently launched our 9 science experiments, and we've designed and built hardware for these 9 experiments, and those experiments complement the content within the children's books. So there is a connection between the books and the science. And the astronauts on board the space station are going to do those 9 experiments and, again, videotape that for us and send that back down to me. And so we have those 2 components, and then we will start working on developing activities for families to do, day camps and programs for science centers, and a curriculum for educators. And so we... how we made this vision come into a reality to have a program like this is, number one, we thought we needed to test out the idea. And so we pilot tested the idea with about 1,100 educators at National Science Teacher Association conferences around the country. And we had an overwhelming response, a positive response. It was actually the best response I have ever had from some research that I've done with educators. And so I knew from an educator's perspective we were on to something. From my work being at Space Center Houston, I knew some of the other sides of the program had a solid content. We asked several of the astronauts if they were interested in doing something like this, because if you don't have the astronauts enjoying what they're doing, especially if you're reading a book to children, then it's just not going to come across quite right, right? And
right.
We have that buy-in from the astronauts as well. And we did get that. Then we pilot tested it on STS-133, and Alvin Drew read a book, Max Goes to the Moon, and we pilot tested it. And we actually had that on the computer. We sent up an electronic version, and it turns out we didn't like that as much, so that's how we ended up actually sending the physical books up there, is because we tried it electronically, and it didn't have quite the same feel. So there's that, and then to make it become a reality, I pulled in some people who are equally as passionate about education and are incredibly intelligent people and love space exploration as well. And as a team, we all started working together to, you know, make this happen and to get some things flown to the space station.
Wow, that's amazing. My initial thought was, how did you pick the books?
the first book, having worked down at the Space Center before, there was a bookshop there, and I used to go in there all the time and look at the children's books. And there was a series of books that I loved, and they were by Jeffrey Bennett. And this is kind of a cute story that book, so I'll relate it. So Alvin Drew and I were sitting around talking about this program, and I said, well, you know, I know these books that Jeffrey Bennett has written, and it was Max Goes to the Moon. And I said, maybe we should just call him and see if he'd be interested in having his book go up to space. And Alvin was like, okay. So we get on the phone and we phone him, and we just sort of say, hey, this is what we're thinking of doing. Would you like to have your book go up to space station and be part of this program? And he was kind of laughing on the other end. He thought somebody was playing a prank on him. And we had to sit there, and I put Alvin on and everything, and he's kind of like, no, really, this is real. We are really wanting to do this. And then from that moment on, Jeff was absolutely on board. Jeff's also an astrophysicist, and so he has a lot of the science and space background, along with being an incredible children's author. So our first set of books were based off of his series, because we needed to make sure we were doing things correctly, and, you know, there's a learning curve to all these kinds of projects, and especially with working with NASA and getting the payload up and everything. So Jeff's book, Max Goes to the Moon, Max Goes to Mars, Max Goes to Jupiter, and Max is a dog. his Rottweiler.
Oh.
And then The Wizard Who Saved the World were four books that he had already written. And then he wrote a fifth book called, for the program, called Max Goes to the International Space Station. So we sent those five books up first. The next round of books that we sent up, the next seven books that we sent up, we just did some homework and looked for books that we liked the content and was able to help us highlight some of the sciences within the science experiments that we were planning on doing. And so, again, we want to make sure that there's a connection between the science and the literacy. And we are now ready to start looking for our third set of books. So any listeners out there, if you know of a great children's book and would like to see that book go up to space and be part of Storytime from Space, you can email me the name of the book and why it's so great. It doesn't need to be a book that is about space. It needs to have some science content in it, whether it's biology or chemistry or whatever the science is, but have some science content in it. And it needs to be accurate in the science content. And then from there, we can jump into discussions with the authors and publishers to determine what our next set of books will be.
That's amazing. And what was the, it really is amazing. And what's been the response with NASA in all of this? Was it easy to sell them the idea? Because I know that payload weight is a big issue as well.
Right, right. And that's why we tried to do it electronically first, because then there would be no payload weight, right? But NASA has been phenomenal. Two organizations, NASA and another organization called CASES, and that stands for the Center for the Advancement of Science in Space. They are the group, CASES is the group that NASA has helping them get payloads up to orbit. And it was a matter of talking to a lot of people, a lot of friends, a lot of former coworkers, and saying, okay, how do we make this happen? And, having the support of the astronauts really helped as far as it was a project that they would enjoy doing. And then you have to work through what's called the payload process. And, and I said earlier that I like to take on challenges. This has been about a four and a half year challenge so far to get to where we are, to get items up onto the space station. And so it's not something that just happens overnight. It takes a long time and a lot of work to get these things up there. And so the NASA folks have been phenomenal. We have conference calls every week, and they have helped work me through the payload process, because it's not often that an educator goes through the payload process. As for the books, it's a little easier. For the science,
right,
very harder. So.
So what we'll do is when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about that and also how this program became live. We'll be right back for a word from our sponsors on America's Web Radio.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
Obamacare is failing. We all know that, but you need to know why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org. This is Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. Join us at ObamacareWatch.org.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. And as you know, we have this amazing person, Patricia Tribe, who's the founder of Storytime from Space. Just before the break, Patricia, we were talking about the payload that you had to deal with when taking books up to the International Space Station. So tell us a little bit more about that.
Right. Well, the books, as I was saying, are the easier part. The science experiments are a lot more difficult. You have to take into consideration that everything that you send up to the space station has to be safe for the astronauts. And so you have to go through a lot of testing, such as off-gas testing, to make sure that any of the materials that you use in the development of your experiments do not give off a particular kind of gas that could be dangerous to the astronauts, because they can't open a window and air out the space station. So you go through those tests. You go through tests called vibration testing to make sure your equipment can withstand the vibrations during launch. And you go through a lot of safety panels, and you'll have a variety of people from NASA grilling you on the different components of your equipment and making sure that it is safe for the astronauts, which is a great process. And everybody is very supportive to help you get through this. It's quite a process, but it's definitely worth it in the long run. And the people at NASA make it worth it to go through that process, as they're very supportive. So that's you know, a challenge. I guess that's one of the more difficult things to work through. Thankfully, for Storytime from Space, the person who designed and built the hardware for our science experiments is Bjarni Tryggvason, and he is a Canadian astronaut. He flew on the space shuttle, and he also designed his own experiment when he flew on the space shuttle, so he had gone through this payload process before, and he knows what it takes to build something to go into space. And so, you know, for instance, we have some cells that have fluid in them. And, you know, how do you make sure that those cells are not going to break and that fluid get out? And, you know, down to what kind of glue are you using and what kind of off-gas does that glue give you? And the little things that, yeah, as an educator, it was quite the learning experience for me. Thankfully, we had Bjarni on our team to help us go through that. So that's been quite the adventure.
How many experiments did you do?
We have 9. They just launched on SpaceX 9. Yay! we tried launching them once before, about a year and a month ago. We were on SpaceX 7, and if anybody looks up SpaceX 7 on YouTube, you will find that 2 minutes into flight, it had a catastrophic anomaly, which basically means it blew up. And so we lost all of our hardware, that was pretty shocking. And then we made the decision to rebuild, and so it's taken us this last year to rebuild and to get on another flight. And now the hardware is safe and sound up on the International Space Station, ready for the astronauts to start conducting the experiments.
Well, and what are the 9 experiments?
The 9 experiments are all experiments that deal with very basic science concepts that everybody has to learn. You know, as young people in school, we have to learn, and as adults, we use all the time. And so those are balance. You know, how does a balance work up on orbit, and what's the difference between weight and mass? If you think about a balance down here on Earth, if you were putting something on one side of the balance, and then you put the same amount of weight on the other side of the balance, and you get it to balance nicely. Well, if everything is floating because you're in free fall, will that balance work? And how do we make a balance work in orbit? So we're going to play around with that concept. And then buoyancy is the next one. And so floating and sinking for little people, and we have a capsule that has little styrofoam balls and little steel balls in it, and we're going to see what happens when it's just up there on the space station. Are both of those balls going to float or sink, or what are they going to do? And then we will accelerate that little cell that has those balls in it, make it move, and see what happens when we do that, see if something different happens. And then we have one called heat transfer, and we're going to, we have three discs, one's black, one's polished silver, and one's white, and we're going to put those in the window of the space station and see how quickly they heat up and what the difference is. And one of the really important things about all of these experiments is we're going to have kids be able to do earthbound experiments that are very similar, if not identical. So they're going to be able to compare what they do on Earth with what the astronauts are doing up on the space station. So heat transfer, we'll see about how those discs work. And then this one, I think, is going to be just super cool. It's our light experiment. And our light experiment, we had a gadget called a spectrometer donated to us by PNP Optica. And this spectrometer, we're going to, the astronaut's going to point the spectrometer at a sunset. So they're going to watch the sunset from orbit with the spectrometer pointed at the sunset. And the spectrometer is going to take in all that light and break it into wavelengths, and we're going to be able to tell what's in the atmosphere by the different wavelengths that the spectrometer breaks the light into. And so that's going to be really neat. We're going to be able to talk about global warming and, you know, components of our atmosphere with that experiment. And we have one called meniscus, which is surface tension. And we are going to, this cell actually was donated to us by the University of Toronto. And so there's some fluid inside, and we're going to just see, you know, when you fill your glass really full down here on Earth, some of that water it holds together. That's your surface tension, and right where it comes up onto the edges, that's your meniscus. And we're going to see if the fluids do the same thing up on orbit. And then we have one on pendulums and how pendulums might work up on orbit. And we have one on orbits themselves. And we have one on free fall. And so the astronauts are going to be our experimenters for the free fall experiment. They're going to actually be part of the experiment for that one. And then our final one is going to be some of the effects on the human body. And we're going to test to see if astronauts grow in space. And we'll see what happens with those. Those are our nine. How's that for a multiple?
That's pretty amazing. And how are you going to show that to the kids on ground? Is it like a live video feed from your website? Or how is that going to work?
The astronauts will be doing the experiments, and they will be recording the experiments themselves, and they're also going to be recording them doing the experiments. So we have multiple cameras going, and so all of that will come back to us and will be put onto our website. Yeah. So everybody will be able to pick and choose if they want to see the orbit experiment. They can just go to the orbit experiment and then do their own experiment back here on Earth. We'll have the activities on the website as well. And then they can read one of the books with their kids about Max the dog up in orbit.
That's amazing. And also with the experiments, have you created additional support material for the teachers in the classroom as well?
That is what the next step for story time. And so, yes, we will be creating that. We need to make sure we get the content from the astronauts down first and start seeing what they did and how they conducted their experiment. so we can make sure that what we're putting in for the curriculum and the experiment for the kids to do on Earth matches up to what it was done, up on orbit. So we just have to wait for a little bit longer until those experiments come back down to us, and then we'll have the curriculum. And we're going to have curriculum for educators at different levels, but we're also going to have activities for families. And so, you know, if you have a grandkid or you have a child or you're having a birthday party and you want to have a story time theme, you can have some activities that you could do with your little people as well. That could be kind of fun.
Well, how long does the time take to get from Earth to the International Space Station?
How long does it take? If you go directly, like for instance on the space shuttles when they were going up, that was 8.5 minutes to get to orbit, and then you have to catch up to the space station. And so in this situation, the Dragon capsule that SpaceX has, that our equipment was inside, it's called, the capsule's name is Dragon, and so the Dragon capsule launched and was in orbit fairly quickly. But then it took a day to catch up to the space station. And that kind, you know, it can vary how quickly they catch up to the space station depending on how much propellant they're using. But it, you know, on average, let's say it takes a day to get to the space station, and then they have to dock, which is quite a tricky maneuver. So.
And I guess because we don't have the space shuttle program anymore, so how are the astronauts getting up there?
Well, all of the equipment and things that I'm talking about went up on, and SpaceX and Orbital are two organizations in the United States that have been launching up to the International Space Station. And the astronauts themselves launch out of Russia on their capsule. So right now that is the only way for humans to get up is from launching out of Russia.
Okay. And then the ones that you are, they're unmanned craft.
Correct.
So just not only the experiments, but it's also supplies for the Space Center and other equipment that they provide up there?
Right, right, that launch up on these rockets, yes. So most of what will go up there will be items to either new science experiments or food or resupplies of some sort for the astronauts. And then there may be a piece of new hardware, if depending on the size, if it's small enough to fit in. For instance, on this last one, a docking adapter was sent up, and so that's more of a piece of equipment. And so there's always a mixture of things that go up, some fresh food, which is really important for astronauts, because when you're up there for a long time, the only time you get...
Buzz off with Lawyer Liz. Join me each week, Wednesdays at 2 o'clock, as we talk drones, Internet of Things, and technology.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose. And with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Are your health insurance premiums going up? You are not alone. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org to understand why and what you can do to get us back on the right track. This is Grace Marie Turner, president of the Galen Institute. Visit us at ObamacareWatch.org.
This is America'sWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
You are listening to The Cool Project Show, and today we are talking with Patricia Tribe. She's an educator and advocate for space exploration and also the founder of Storytime in Space. So just before the break, I want to say this is such a great idea, and, you know, what has the support been like for you?
The support has been phenomenal. I'm not sure I could emphasize that enough. We've had support from CASIS, as I've mentioned, the Center for the Advancement of Science in Space. They saw the potential of this program and said, great, come on board. And they provided us with an initial grant to do the research to make sure it was something that the educators wanted to see and would use, and so that it was a useful educational program, not just something that was fluffy. And so CASIS has been a huge supporter. And then NASA, obviously, have been phenomenal. They supported us in the sense of helping us work through that payload process. They have supported us with astronaut time up on orbit, and that's very precious time. And so it goes to show that NASA is supportive of education and sees the value in education when they will donate to us the astronaut time up on orbit to do these programs and to do these experiments and readings. So that's been phenomenal. We have a team, the Storytime from Space team, and to this point, everybody has donated their time to get us up to orbit. And so on that team, again, is Bjarni Tryggvason, who has done all of the science experiment work, and Alvin Drew, who's a NASA astronaut, who helped us pilot test this and do the initial steps for getting this program up and running. And Alvin has been very supportive of education. Both Bjarni and Alvin, all the time that I have known them, they've both been very passionate about education. And Alvin's mother is a former kindergarten teacher, so there was a nice connection there as well. Then we have Jeffrey Bennett, who is the author of the first set of books. And Jeff has also been very supportive. And Big Kid Science, his company, has donated funds to help us get our rebuild of our equipment done, because when that rocket blew up, there went $70,000 worth of equipment. Yeah, so we had to rebuild. Jeff's company, Big Kid Science, was supportive in helping us do that. We have Jack Moore, who is our website person, and he is the person that does all of our editing. He is a good friend of mine that I used to work with down at Space Center Houston, and he is down there, and he works at NASA, and so he does all of our editing for us and helps with our marketing and is our creative mind in our in our team. We also have Debbie Brown Biggs, who is an educator, a fellow educator, and so she will be helping with our curriculum and our professional development side of things once we get that going. And then a couple of other folks that helped me right here in Canada. John Bubb is a gentleman that's also helping us with our website, and Lynn Cook helps me with a whole variety of things, and she's my my right hand up here. And so that team has all donated their time to get this project going. We've had, as I mentioned, a couple of folks that have donated items for the actual rebuild and for the science experiments, and that was PMP Optica. And their specialization is building spectrometers, and they donated two spectrometers. The first one we was in the accident, and then they came and donated the second one, so that's great support. And the University of Toronto, they are the folks that donated those fluid cells that we're using for the meniscus surface tension experiment. And so they have been with us the whole time. So and then, you know, there's actually a lot of individuals who have either donated on our website, or we did a GoFundMe project to try and rebuild the equipment, and we have individuals that supported us to get that equipment rebuilt. So we've had great support, and I honestly have not come across one person that when I describe this program and say, we're going to have astronauts reading to kids from orbit and doing experiments with kids and connecting the two. There hasn't been anybody who hasn't said, that's really cool. You know, how do we support that, or how do we get to use that? When can I use that? That sort of thing. And so I'm really hopeful for the future of Storytime because of all of the support.
Well, that's amazing. You've got quite a diverse team members there.
Yes.
That's quite an operation that you have. So, you know, what is the cost to operate such a program like this, and how is it funded right now?
You know, I don't know that I could give you a absolute number on the operating costs at this point, because the cost of astronaut time up on orbit...
That's priceless.
...that, right? and so, you know, as I mentioned, everybody has been volunteering their time in order to do this. So it has been a project that we've all had the discussion, and we made the decision that we wanted to make sure that we got all of our equipment and our books up to orbit before we started talking to any sponsors and finding a named sponsor. And we did that because, you know, you could go to a sponsor and say, hey, this is our idea, this is what we want to do, but till you can get something up to space, you know, it's one of those things that lots of people try and it doesn't always happen. And you come across accidents like we had and that sort of thing. So there isn't a very specific timeline that you can say, yes, to a sponsor, I'm going to, you know, send these books up on this date, and I'm going to send this up on these experiments up on this date. And so we decided that we wanted to get the content for all of our programs. We wanted to get that content up there before we went to sponsors and said, would you like to help support us now in taking all that content and getting it out to all of our audiences and continuing on with developing a library up on the space station and, you know, those sorts of things. So we've done it probably the hard way, but we think it was the ethical and the right way to do it. So, yeah, that's where we're at now, actually. We've, like I said, just got our equipment up there, so... Now we're going to focus on talking to organizations or foundations or companies that are interested in sponsoring this program and being our named sponsor. So we want think big. We want, you know, folks that are as passionate about education as we are and, you know, see the value in working with educators and students and science centers and families within their communities and stuff. So that's our next step.
And do you plan to monetize it or just focus on sponsorship?
Our first preference would be to focus on sponsorship. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, we're in it because we want people to have good experiences with science, technology, engineering, mathematics, with STEM. We want people to, you know, be able to engage in that. We want kids to engage in that. And, you know, in the long run, our countries need that. And so
yeah,
there's that bigger, you know, bigger goal and a more passionate goal there that we are based our whole, you know, concept on. The fact that we're using the space station and doing all of this is really, really neat, but the underlying goal is to improve STEM education and, you know, to use literacy and the enjoyment of children's books to help with that. And so if we would prefer to focus on sponsorship so that we could keep that free for folks to access. If not, there are ways that we can monetize it off of the website, and, you know, we can put together packages for families and packages for educators and sell all those things off of the websites, which includes the videos that are coming down from the space station so that people can use that, and we can develop day camps for science centers and professional development for educators. And the professional development, actually, is one of the really important aspects of our long-term goal is to work with educators, and using this program, they can implement in their classroom the concepts that they already need to teach, they can just implement it in a different way and hopefully in a fun way, and we can help support them and give them some training on that. So all of those things you can monetize, but our goal would be, if there's any great sponsors out there listening to these, but our goal would be to have a name sponsor so that we could offer that to folks for free or for a much reduced price. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And who would be your ideal sponsors for this?
You know, we've talked about you. An ideal sponsor might be somebody that's already within the aerospace industry, and that would be great. But it's not our only sponsor option. We really, as I mentioned before, some foundations, you know, foundations think big, and they think, you know, a little differently than organizations, and so. We want somebody that's willing to see the long term of this project, be a five year or plus project, that, you know, together we can make this something special. So some foundations out there, we've been doing our research and seeing that there's folks that have similar passions. You know, the education is very important, and doing something, nobody else in the world is doing this. It is a one-of-a-kind project. So anybody that wants to be unique, is passionate about education and understands the draw of space exploration and the uniqueness of what we're doing.
And how are you promoting this program right now?
Right now, we have our website, we have a Facebook page, we are on Twitter as well. And especially when we launch and stuff, we get lots of fun action happening on Twitter. And we've had a lot of articles in space magazines and support from media, and both in the United States and in Canada, we've had quite a support. We have had a lot of awareness and support from folks over in the UK. One of the books that we sent up was called The Incredible Intergalactic Journey Home, and that book is made by a company called Lost My Name, and they are based out of the UK. And they just had a UK astronaut up on space station, and that astronaut actually read their book. And so,
oh wow.
The UK has picked up on this quite a bit, and we are...
I'm Marita News, and I would like to invite you to listen live or download my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Buzz Off with Lawyer Liz. Join me each week, Wednesdays at 2 o'clock, as we talk drones, Internet of Things, and technology.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby. The first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to our last segment of our show, and we've been talking with Patricia Tribe, who's the founder of Storytime in Space program. We were actually talking about the storytelling of the books. Do you have plans to do it in other languages rather than just English?
Yes, we do, actually, and up on the space station there are partner space agencies from different countries, and so there are JAXA astronauts, which are from the Japanese Space Agency, and there's Russian cosmonauts, and there's the European astronauts, as I was mentioning before. Tim Peake was just up there from the UK, and so there are a variety of individuals and countries representing different languages up on the space station. We have been very fortunate in that Koichi Wakata, one of the JAXA Japanese astronauts, has already read one of our books in Japanese. The Wizard Who Saved the World by Jeffrey Bennett was read in Japanese, and so we're really thrilled with that. That will make its way onto our website. We are hopeful that, you know, as we get more books up there and as the connection works, we will be able to have perhaps books done in Spanish, because that's a pretty major language within the United States and around the world. And so, yes, we're hopeful that we can get even more languages done, but we already have one in Japanese. So.
And would that go for the experiments as well, done in different languages?
Well, it may. The experiment may be conducted by folks that speak different languages. Whether the whole experiment would be done in a different language, we have not investigated that yet. It's possible, especially if there is somebody up on orbit that's, you know, pretty committed to education and would like to do that, then we would be all for it. But we could also put translations on our website. We do have we have multiple languages being translated, the books being translated into multiple languages, and those translations will go on the website. And so if somebody from another country gets onto our website, they will be able to read some of the books in other languages as well and follow along with the astronauts in their own language. So we have some of that going.
Well, that's amazing. Now, you know, you are so passionate about education and space exploration. What is your vision for space exploration now?
I think the vision is best left up to the young people of today, those folks that are in their teens and early 20s that are just getting into the workforce, they've gone through university, they've got their engineering degree or their science degree or their education degree or whatever their degree might be, and they have the energy and the unique new ideas. And for me, watching SpaceX and some of these commercial companies come on board, do incredible things, you know, especially with the SpaceX folks who've landed their first stage back onto a barge on the ocean and then back down onto the ground at Cape Canaveral. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we would all have been saying, oh, that's not really possible, or that's just too hard to do, or what have you. But with the change in technology and with all these young people working on these new projects, and, you know, they don't have boundaries, right? They are young and they're ready to go take on the world, and they just do amazing things. So, you know, my vision would be, yes, let's go out to other planets. Let's get something established on the moon. Let's have people living on the moon and learn from that. And eventually, as we work out some of those more complex problems, we'll get people heading towards Mars. But, you know, the fact that we've now seen Pluto and we've seen Jupiter, you know, the things that are coming up are just unbelievable. And it's going to be so exciting to see what happens because of all of these young people that will be making it happen. I have lots of ideas. I would love to see lots of things happen out there in space exploration. But I'm going to sit back and enjoy watching what some of these younger people are coming up with, because, man, it's impressive what they can do with the technology and stuff nowadays.
Well, I think the whole thing, even with the Hubble telescope, has really opened up the eyes and hearts and imagination of space exploration for everyone out there.
Yeah. It's so intriguing because there's so much to learn. And, you know, it's still a pretty challenging thing to undertake. And so, you know, it's going to be a very exciting thing as our future unveils what little mysteries we're going to find out there in the universe.
And so what next steps for Storytime in Space? Like, how would you like to see this grow?
We'll be getting a name sponsor and starting our development of the curriculum and the programs for folks to be able to use. And we will continue to send up more books and hopefully more science. As I mentioned before, we do have another launch for books, and so one of our next steps will be to work with people to find our next set of books. The science experiments, we have lots of ideas for more experiments that folks can use back here on Earth as well as see what happens up on orbit. So we will continue, hopefully, to build the library of both the science time in space and the story time in space up on orbit, and start getting all of that out to folks around the world.
Do the books come back to Earth afterwards?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I'm like, you're building a library up there.
Yeah, and that's one of, we are building a little library up there, and but we need to have some of the books come back down because there isn't a lot of space up there. And so things do tend to go up and then stay up for a while and then rotate and come back down. And so we will have some of our initial books coming back down probably within this next year. Our science experiments will probably stay up for a while, our equipment, because it can be used in multiple ways, and so the equipment might stay up for a while longer. But yes, we will start to have some of our books come back down.
Oh, wow. And so your equipment, is it used for other experiments with the astronauts as well?
We would be completely open that if somebody else wanted to, one of the astronauts needed to use the spectrometer for something, then go right ahead, use the spectrometer. But, you know, if we send up any more experiments, then we are hoping that we can use some of our original materials within that so we don't have to send up as much. We've already got some things up there, like our data unit and our stand and our Hero 4 camera and things like that that we could use over and over in different experiments. And so we'll hopefully keep that up there for a little while.
And how often do these rockets go up there?
The SpaceX rocket is called the Dragon. That capsule is called the Dragon. And then Orbital ATK has a rocket and a capsule as well. They go up 3-4 times a year. It varies, again, depending on what's needed and how quickly there can be a turnover. And then the Russian folks are also launching multiple times a year because they're doing up the crew exchanges, and they have a capsule as well that can take up unmanned items. And so between, you know, there's quite a few launches throughout the year if everything goes well. And then sometimes, you know, something changes and you have to shift the launch date, and so things get pushed a bit. But several launches a year.
I hadn't realized how busy the International Space Station is.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible what those folks are doing up there, and what all of the NASA and the other countries are doing. It is the world's biggest cooperative project ever undertaken. And sometimes we forget that. And, you know, there's been people living up on orbit continuously for over 10 years. And it's like, wow, you stop and think about that.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's incredible what they're doing up there.
Well, how many people are up there?
There's usually, right now, there's 6 people on orbit all the time.
How do people get a hold of you?
So if anybody would like to chat with me about books that are going up, or they'd like to see go up, if there's educators out there that want to say, hey, this is a great book, I use it in the classroom all the time, and authors that think their book would fit the criteria, and publishers that want to work with Storytime from Space and play along with us, then you can email me, and it's patricia.tribe, T-R-I-B as in boy, E, @gmail.com. And then anybody that would like, if you're interested in sponsoring and chatting about that, you could email me or give me a call. And my phone number here in the office is 250-492-7965. And our website is pretty simple. It's storytimefromspace.com. And then we have a Facebook page, so you can just find us from on Facebook under Storytime from Space. And our Twitter handle is Storytime Space. We couldn't get the from in there. It was too long.
It was too long.
Storytime Space. So, yes, it would be great. You can, I post onto the Facebook page some pictures and really cool stuff that I get from NASA that I think people might be interested in, and other things like that. So, yeah, just like us on Facebook or join us on Twitter and get in contact with me if you have any questions.
That's fantastic. So how many schools have been involved in this so far?
I honestly could not tell you. I know a lot.
Yeah, I could well imagine.
Yeah, I know some. I've had feedback from some schools in Colorado who had an entire space day that they built around this, and they had they showed the kids, so everybody in the school, some of the readings from the astronauts, and then they also read the books in the classroom and did some science experiments and had guest speakers come in. And so, you know, that's been happening. I know I even had folks from Australia send me some pictures of their kids watching some of the readings from up on orbit. And so folks all around the world are starting to enjoy it, and hopefully more and more.
Well, I want to say a big thank you, Patricia, for being on the show, and I wish you all the best. This is such an amazing program and project, and thank you for being on our show. So if you'd like to reach out to Patricia, we will also be having this on the America's Web Radio website, as well as the coolprojects.com website, with the links to this interview, and we'll add some links to her website and images that you can actually see about the program. And if you would like to also have any projects to be showcased on the show, please feel free to contact us at coolprojects@americaswebradio.com. Patricia, again, thank you so much for being on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me and letting me share my passion and my love for space and education.
This is great. And thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great week. Bye-bye for now.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.